Hey, guys.
What's up, G?
Wanna go to Tchotchke's? Get some coffee?
Oh, it's a little early.
I gotta get out of here. I think I'm gonna lose it.
Uh-oh. Sounds like somebody's got a case of the Mondays.
Yeah, let's cut to the chase, okay? What are you guys selling?
If you're drowning and I throw you a life jacket, would you grab it? Yes, good. Pick up 200 shares. I won't let you down.
Pay that man his money.
Ask them how they'd like to see 30, 40% returns. What are they gonna say? No? I don't want to see those returns.
Where's the money, Lebowski?
You're going to make a lot of money, right?
Be aggressive. Learn how to push.
Show him a 3% return, and I'll trust you to watch his kids for the weekend.
I'm a big fan of money.
Move around. Motion creates emotion.
I did not know that.
That's it. I'm done.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe. Matt Byrne on the board. Greg Pappas in studio. S&P futures up 4. NASDAQ futures down 83. We're down, up 83. We were up a bunch more last night, but not now. After Friday's pretty huge down day. Friday, for just as a way of review, as I'm talking about it, for those of you that don't want to hear about it, close your ears. Dow was down 305. NASDAQ down 427. It was 2.25%. S&P is down 78, 1.3. So Friday was an ugly one. Ugh. So, Greg, how are you?
Doing well. Ready to rock this week.
I'm glad to see you didn't.
I think NVIDIA earnings are this Wednesday.
Yeah, I'm glad you didn't reach for the Tesla's up another $21.
Whoa.
That's probably, it is so funny when you talk to people in regards to.
And Tesla's what, over 300 now?
Yeah, 342. When you talk to people about the political situation, when everybody knows it, everybody should know that I'm sort of in the middle on this, and I'm kind of appalled at both parties at this point, but. If you're a fan of the current group that just got in, and you're ready to, and you think Musk is the savior of the world, and none of the normal conventions or rules, and I don't really know what the situation is, to be honest with you. I just asked the question, but nobody seems to care. So okay, what exactly does this guy's appointment, he and the other guy, Swamy, is that a real position? Is that a full-time job? Is that a part-time job? What's the difference? Oh, okay.
We don't know yet.
Okay, we don't. That's what I'm saying. We know nothing. What is it? Is it a new cabinet-level position, or is it something like Simpson-Bowles, which I suspect but they were both in Congress, weren't they? And this was a special. Was that a congressional or was that a administrative? Request that they go that they do all the stuff that they did. If nobody remembers, Simpson-Bowles,
I think they were recommendations submitted by when both of the parties come together.
But I'm trying to think. Were they assigned the task by the Congress or by Obama? Well, I got to read up on this. Maybe John Flanagan will know when he
comes
on.
DOGE is supposed to be an outside department, not necessarily.
Okay, but now what does that mean? Are they? There are two advisors, but now you can't have an outside department. Now, are they going to get paid? Are they going to have a staff? Is the staff going to get paid? Is there going to be a budget for them? Is there going to be an HR group for them? But if you love the new president and you love Musk, nobody cares. Now, does this mean that he gets to sell his stock without paying taxes on it or deferred taxes? What do you mean? Well, people with cabinet level positions, if they get the nod from the ethics group, like, I can't imagine who the ethics guy is going to be.
Well, what it says on Wikipedia, I just pulled it up here, is a planned presidential advisory commission.
Okay. So it's not a full-time job. It's a commission of some sort. Is it a time limit?
It is not expected to require approval from the U.S. Congress.
Okay.
So the co-commissioners would be Musk and Ramaswamy.
And they get access to what by being a commission? I mean, I'm saying there's an awful lot of this whole idea of getting other people to do other people's jobs. I think that's how we got in this mess in the first place in Washington, right? Too many people, duplicative departments.
Right.
I mean, I don't know why you have a Congressional Budget Office, you have whatever Simpson-Bowles did. Why don't you just dust that thing off and read it, for God's sake? It's got to be. It can't be out of date, is it?
It was 20 years ago.
Okay, but I mean, you think this. The places they said were wasting money aren't anymore?
It probably got worse, right?
Yeah, probably got worse. I'll never forget the one line of the one of the There were one. Who was the tall kind of? Oh God, the tall kind of hatchet face dude, and the other guy was a little smaller.
It's only 14-year-olds.
Yeah, he says if we didn't piss you off, we either forgot about you or you didn't read it or something like that.
Oh, get this. Simpson Bowles was an 18-member commission consisting of 12 members of Congress and 6 private citizens.
Yeah, I mean, it was a real deal. So we got to do. How's that for government duplication?
When the government does it, it's 16 people, and when the private sector does it, it's 2 people.
Well, I don't. Don't give these guys that kind of
18 people.
You're not going to have anybody helping them.
No, they're not going to do any work. It's going to be.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
So, I mean, do they have the ability to hire and fire? I mean, who can they? I mean, Simpson Bowles was able to.
Interestingly enough, one of the chief critics of Simpson Bowles was a congressman from here, Jan Schakowsky.
Really?
A commission member, yeah.
Why?
It would cut entitlement and social safety net programs.
Well, the whole idea of some of this stuff is to find out what's not working, right?
Right.
I don't think anybody wants to see people starve, but if it's duplicative and it's not working properly.
Yeah, cut is a large. That's a pretty encompassing.
Well, isn't that.
If you cut something 30 years in the future, is that a cut or is that a. I don't know. It says Durbin was on it, Max Baucus was on it, Kent Conrad.
That's what I'm saying. A lot of the work has probably already been done. I don't know.
So not only did Illinois make it into the House part where there were 3 people, or 6 people from each, but Illinois also, Durbin was also on the Senate side.
Jan Schakowsky was on the House side?
Yeah. How about that?
Well, I mean.
Power.
My issue with a lot of the stuff that goes on in government, I mean, is. I mean, some people, I've never been of this ilk, but an awful lot of people, you know, I'll say it, a lot of people in this country have, like, really small minds about a lot of stuff. Somebody's always getting something I'm not getting, so they don't deserve it, or everybody, I still remember the poster in a saloon in South Bend, just remember, everybody in the world except you is overpaid. You know, and it's, a lot of people feel that way, unfortunately. But I think what I see in government is a lot of duplicative effort. I mean, this whole consumer, what is it, a consumer protection division? What's her name, the guy? What's the lady who says she's Indian half the time? Tells her name. Senator
Elizabeth Warren.
Yeah. She's, this was kind of her baby. Well, we've got the Federal Reserve. We've got the Comptroller of Currency. We've got all these other people, FDIC, allegedly riding herd on banks. We don't need another group because they're not doing their job. Why don't you just make them do their job? That's the part that I see. We always need a new group. Now here, this is a new group.
We have a new group.
We got a Congressional Budget Office. We had Simpson Bowles. We had all this stuff. Now all of a sudden, we need a new group. These guys are really tough. Okay. Unfortunately, the facts are, for the last 40 to 50 years, the Democrats like to send out money to people, and they don't have the balls, basically, to raise taxes to meet the number. Republicans can't wait to cut taxes, mostly for rich people.
Well, it's interesting because the Democrats send money to people, and the Republicans send money to businesses.
Well, that's kind
of
changed.
In the eyes of the law, companies are people.
Yeah, but either one, the Republicans are never going to cut enough or can't cut enough to make it match. The Democrats won't tax enough to make it match. So there you are.
I think you just solved government.
Yeah, but the idea is, but the weird part is,
that's the equilibrium. You just need to maintain enough of that transfer the debt goes to the public rather than the private.
Well, right now, the problem is we have too much debt. It has been for a while.
Why?
What do you mean, why?
Well, it's too much.
Well,
I say we have too little.
You're on the one side that says it doesn't matter. But when these rates go to 6 or 7% and a third of the government's spending is on interest, we got a problem. We got a problem right now. I mean, who says?
Market doesn't say.
We're pouring money into the system. Just remember, the day the Weimar Republic went under, I think the market was at a record high. So
yeah, market's up. But everything's fine.
That's probably the single dumbest thing that Trump brought to the table. The market's going up. I must be doing good.
Well, yeah, but the market's only like 5 or 10% of people.
So. Yeah. So what'd you think of? Oh, by the way, I have a question.
Can't have real estate prices go down either. That would be
that's
would
exactly
be bad.
Right. Well, that's what this weekend I was doing a little bit of research and sent stuff out to the Stacks and Jacks clientele and some to Greg. But one I did not send out, Greg, which I want you to comment
on.
Oh,
no.
I was listening to News Radio 78 yesterday, and I'll give them kudos because they come up with some pretty good stuff. Had to do with the new liquor tax, the proposed liquor tax by by the mayor.
Yeah.
It's a
sin tax.
Well, yeah, it's
or it's an addition to what we already have.
Yeah, and maybe he buys his booze in the end. I don't know what he does, but the anyway, the story would be that
it would just be passed on to customers.
I understand, but what I'm trying to get to here, and I'm stuttering along, the dude who was given the report, he had a guy from the restaurant industry on, and he said in the last, you know, I was somebody was honking, but in the last year or two or 3 years, whatever it is, actually he said since the start of recreational marijuana, the average person in wherever the places that he studies is down from 2.5 to 1.7 drinks. And he didn't say because we raised the price, which it could be a lot of things. He said the average patron now is down from 2.5 drinks to 1.7. If that's true, that's a bleep load difference, 30%.
Yeah, it'd be interesting to see at the personal level if that or what percentage of that money that is not spent on drinks is spent on marijuana.
Well, it also could just mean since marijuana stuff came out, the price of drinks in any bar has got to be up 30%.
So yeah, the price of most stuff is just generally up in terms of food. I want to say also that, what was it? It depends a lot on the demographic, in that if you're the younger, call it under 25, you're also drinking less just because that's how you've always been. And your preference might be to the whatever, what's it called, the vapes, meaning the other nicotine like Zyn. So those mini pouches of nicotine and also the vapes are just more popular with the younger demographics. So
it
could be they're
vaping in series all the time. Is that legal inside?
No, that is not. it's the same as smoking. Wherever there's food, you know, you have to be, at least in the city, you have to be, I think, 15 feet away.
Well, what's the little thing guys pull out of their pocket and take a big hit?
Those are vapes, yeah.
All right.
That's this classified the same as smoking. So no, you can't do it in a restaurant.
But I've seen people do it.
Oh, yeah, they try to sneak and be cute and would politely remind them that it's not allowed. They get angry.
Well, and then they get pissed?
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, that's always cool. So what did you... so this here's a good one. Here's how the Stacks and Jacks is all organized sometimes. For years, literally for years, I've mentioned that some of the original three or four technical indicators were, what, it's candlesticks is one, right?
Advanced decline.
Advanced decline, and there's a...
It's interesting.
The guy with the beard down to his knees, what's his name?
Beard down to his knees?
Everything's two-thirds. What's Fibonacci?
Yeah, it's interesting to look at the Granville book like you had and then compare it to what's really going on with machine learning and call it what stuff like Renaissance and a couple other firms at the forefront of kind of being able to analyze data. All they're really doing is taking that and updating it and letting a computer look at those same types of numbers and inputs, and then they have the results come out and say, you know, 1/20th of the time that they used to do the analysis there. And it's the same thing in a different age with different tools.
Well, when I first came down to the trading floor in the little spot now where they've got the sofa in the Board of Trade, they used to be a place where you bought smokes and candy and stuff. They also had a big rack of books. And one of the things on the rack of books were this huge thing of charts. And it took every corn, every, you know, would be July corn, December corn, and every, the book was pretty thick, but it was all in paper you could write at, for lack of a better term. So what you did is you got your chart book, and every date it happened that week, you extended the chart by hand, and you could on every page.
Right.
You could write on it. People had their protractors out and their rulers and stuff. I don't even know what a protractor is anymore. And then next week, you could go buy the new one, and then you could throw out the old one because they had it on there neater than you did. So everybody was doing their charts, and everybody was doing their technical stuff and everything. And University of Chicago, you know, you have people that do the, what's the one where you, you know, the double top, and who's that? What it's another technical type of thing, the rising, you know, the rising banner and this, any other thing.
That's a little bit, that kind of has fallen off, but the data points that you're talking about, kind of high, low, close, in terms of moving and weighted averages and volume and advanced decline lines, and that stuff has really been migrated from like those worksheets that you're talking about all the way into deep learning and machine learning and AI, and those machines are, you know, it's got a fancy name, but really what they're looking for are patterns and relationships. Who started it probably back in the late 70s, early 80s was Jim Simons. And
who's the dude that had the guys on the trading floor would take the course, and it'd be like 4 hours for a couple of weeks, like after trading. It was a long day. Yeah. It was
people
the one
like
where you
Ken Schaling downtown.
But it was the But it was, what was the if it went down but it didn't touch yesterday's low, then it was a bullish sign.
Right, that kind of stuff has just been rebranded data. What's it called?
Data mining.
Data science.
Yeah, data science.
Yeah, so now you can see that. The computer can spot it, obviously, you know, in real time, and it can tell you the relationship and the correlation, and then make a decision about, you know, what's a good entry and exit point. But really all it's doing is in the same vein of what the Granville book talks about, is just looking for patterns, and the timeline of the pattern is, you know, varies. So the carryover, it's still there. It's in full force. You know, everything is still there. It's just kind of changed names.
Well, I think the stuff that trades off hours is a problem, too. You can't really get a real feel in lows and highs and volumes and things, I don't think.
Yeah, I mean, when those were originally coming out, those books were meant for the trading day, high, low, close, and,
yeah.
And now that you have a night session, well, you got a hole in them. How does that? There's 23.5 hours per day of trading. So, you know, what's they just close or, I don't know. It's,
well, the first thing when I got to the University of Chicago, it was a long time ago, because I mean, technical guys have been around forever. I mean, how long has what's his name been around? Fibonacci. He hasn't been around for 1,000 years, so, or however many years. But at the University of Chicago, the first thing they did was they were the first, and like now Indiana's got a big one, Russell's talking, Notre Dame's got one, everybody's got one, a center for research and security pricing. But at the time, University of Chicago was the only place, all the way back to like 1900, to the start of the New York Stock Exchange, every like tick, every uptick and downtick for the stocks are on the New York Stock Exchange. Because you don't really have the ticks up and down in the NASDAQ, so it kind of left out half the stocks. But anyway, they went back into computer modeling and all the charting stuff all that were around at the time. And this is weird. I got to ask Professor Hal, because he's our mathematical genius, and maybe you can tell me. They would come out with, yes, there were double heads. There were the head and shoulders. There was,
you,
what's the one, the expanding banner, or dependent? The University of Chicago, although the computer study said these patterns did exist, but at no point in the pattern was there any predictive that it was, in other words.
I love how it takes University of Chicago PhDs to tell people that you can't predict the future.
Well, but no, what they said is, even though it was a double top, nowhere in the double top was there something that says today's the double top.
Of course.
But the pattern, but they said the patterns are there. There's no question that they're there.
You can find anything you'd like in data.
Well, no, but what I'm saying is you do find double tops. You do see the expanding pennant or whatever that thing is. You do see the Fibonacci-type replacements. But the question is it predictive? At any given day, can you say, this is the top or this is the shoulder or this is something, something? And they found out that you can't.
Right.
But 2 weeks later, so there it was, you know, which is weird, isn't it?
It's if you're looking for things that, you know, can tell you the future, good luck.
Yeah.
It's hasn't been done for a long time, probably will continue. But there is something towards history, what rhymes and doesn't repeat.
Well,
so if you can kind of pull some of that data and see a little bit of rhyming, then maybe you might be able to figure out something to do, as long as you're not putting yourself, you know, it all comes back down to the risk management. So the risk management, meaning what happens when you're wrong, that's the important part, more so than can you predict the future.
Because
there is no future if you just stop trading. So it comes down to that more so. So there's the difference between the trader that says, okay, this is happening right now, and we're going to bet $10, versus the trader who's saying, this is happening right now, we're going to bet $10, but it's in a lot smaller account.
Well, the actual conclusion was they tried to find pattern in a tick pattern. A tick is if IBM's trading, you know, 160 and the next, I'll go back to my Ute, the next tick is 160 and an eighth, that's an uptick.
Right.
And it goes back down to 160, it's a downtick. If it keeps banging away at 160 and an eighth forever, it's a neutral tick, right?
Right.
So they would they went back tick by tick, try to find out if any uptick or downtick, if the next one was more likely to be an uptick or a downtick. And they didn't find out that they were totally random.
Greg, right. So what the machines do now is they look at what's happening within the past day or two, what's happening within the past week or two compared to our time frame, and then we're going to make a small bet on what we think based on the past time frame and our trade time frame and see if it works out. And when you make, you know, those bets over the course of a year, and you've got 100 or 1,000 of them, it'll probably work on 55% if you're good. And then as long as you make sure that there's another trading day, then, you know, you get that 55% and you keep going.
Well, they found that there was a very slight propensity, if something was an uptick or a downtick, for the next tick to be up or down. But that you could, given the commissions of the day, you could not take advantage of it. But now commissions have come down a lot. Of course, trading's gone up. There's more trading. Now the question is, That is really the crux of momentum trading, right?
Right.
Is okay, it's going up, it's going to keep
and
going up.
People are still doing that every day, and the most sophisticated algos and market surveillance is looking for that. But what makes them professional rather than, you know, the ability to be there the next day is the only thing that really matters, because if you do have that, call it 5% or whatever, that you do get it right, that extra 5%, and you're 55-45 or 60-40 instead. The only thing that really allows you to take advantage of that is being around for the next day. So more important than finding that is just making sure that whatever bet you put on isn't...
Bet's such a bad word.
Well, whatever trade you put on isn't going to be prohibitive to you trading tomorrow.
Well, that's true. S&P futures up 2, NASDAQ futures up 59. Again, we have everybody's convinced that these guys are going to do this big thing out in Washington. Let's duplicate Washington again, because it's too duplicated already. But these guys are tough. They're tougher than Simpson Bulls. They'll do the job. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
How much confidence do you have that your investments will make you wealthy? Do you truly know the odds? Welcome to Luckbox, the control freak's guide to life, money, and probability. Luckbox shows you how to factor in the likelihood of success before you commit to an investment or any other life decision. Your brain is smarter than your gut, and that's why you owe it to yourself to read Luckbox. We've made it easy because Luckbox is free for 1 year at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Each new issue dives deep into the current investing climate, separates the signal from the noise with timely, actionable trading trading ideas, and equips you with savvy investing tactics you don't already know, all while exploring how to live your best life through music, spirits, food, sports, travel, fitness, and a whole lot more. Luckbox is the essential magazine for proactive investors who are hell-bent on controlling their financial futures. It's for overachievers and alpha types who don't buy into Wall Street's investment gurus. It's for mavericks who believe in life, luxury, and the pursuit of happiness. It's for you. Smart investors don't bet on possibilities, they play the probabilities. Luckbox is $7.99 on newsstands, but you can subscribe for 10 free digital issues at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks. Don't rely on luck. Get Luckbox at luckboxmagazine.com/jocks.
Is your business being challenged by the complexities surrounding healthcare reform or other matters related to human resources management? If so, then Cognos HR can help. A longtime friend and contributor to the Stocks and Jocks radio program, Cognos HR provides its clients with a perfect blend of strategic consulting and day-to-day HR management to drive overall improvement in business performance. Companies that join the Cognos HR family are better able to manage healthcare costs, enhance benefit offerings, and improve employee satisfaction by leveraging our access to Fortune 500 benefits. Our innovative onboarding and payroll technology, along with our constant attention to detail, enables us to provide the highest level of quality service to our clients. Now, your time and energy can be focused on generating business and increasing your bottom line. We'll take care of the rest. For more information, call us at 630-401-8810 or search us on the web at CognosHR.com. Cognos HR, innovation in human resources. Licensed in Illinois and Arizona.
Hello, this is Tom Howell, the Chief. As you all know, the broad markets, especially tech, have been hot for a while. Lots of reasons. New technology, small fixed income returns, a lot of Fed cash, maybe some good management. Recently, however, the rates on fixed income investments, even U.S. Treasury, have risen from the very low levels. Treasuries are more attractive. There might even be some interesting bonds out there. Also, the bull run has some leading stocks with historically high valuations, maybe making long-only positions a little riskier. So what to do? I think the answer is flexibility. The market may keep going higher. It may not. It could even go down. Is fixed income a thought for some part of the portfolio? Rates are not zero anymore. You may want to protect some gains. Think about some rebalancing, address some growing concentration issues, maybe thinking about commodities. We at PTI may have a solution just right for you. Open an account at PTI Pro Direct, PTI's online trading platform using the Interactive Broker high-end platform. There you will find competitive rates and solid execution across all product lines and traditionally high interest on money balances. In addition, at any time you can seamlessly decide for fixed income investments to access Dan Janitas at Kratos Capital for management services. Dan and his team work tirelessly to achieve the highest returns they can in whatever risk category you are comfortable with. You can also quickly access my team for investment services and a wide array of investment strategies on the security or commodity side, protective strategies, concentration issues, or straight long. In one place, you'll be able to be flexible and ride whatever the future market holds with people you are used to hearing and trusting every day. Need help? You got it. Don't need help? That's okay, too. You'll have a great self-management platform with help always available. This market can change on a dime. I believe, like everyone else, having the right people there if needed is the way to go. Call me at 312-663-4310 or email me at time@ptisecurities.com.
You'll get your chance, smart guy.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Right here, right now, right here, right now, right now.
Hello and welcome back, Stocks and Jocks. I'm Tom Howell. Matt Byrne on the board. Greg Pappas in studio. We'll have Jan Flanagan in a minute. S&P futures are up 6. NASDAQ futures up 77. Tesla's up 21. No conflict with this guy. Between Tesla and what's going on with the government, I don't think I've ever seen a more conflicted mess than this Musk brings to the table. But I guess if you love him, you love him, and a lot of people do. Over in Asia, we've got the Nikkei down 422. That's a lot. That's 1.1%. Hang Seng's up 150.8%. Shanghai down 6. Now, Shanghai was down heavy on Friday, but only down 6 today. Those markets are a little bit mixed. Over in Europe, we've got the DAX down 25. That's 0.1%, so not much. A FTSE up 9. Call that flat. CAC around up down 6. Those are really flat, considering after Friday's big down move here. Again, Friday, Dow was down 305. S&P down 78. NASDAQ down 427. Was down more. It came back a little bit on the close. Bonds up 5 basis points, 4.47, heading toward its 4.5% move, 4.5% where it was before the election. The Bund up 4 basis points, 2.39. Japan unchanged at 1.08. Oil up 33 cents, but 67.35, still low under the range. Brent up 45 cents, 71.49. Natural gas up 3 cents, 286. Arbob up a penny, 186. Gold up 26 bucks, 25.95. Still nowhere near the 27.50, but it's come off the bottom here pretty strong. Well, what we think was the recent bottom. Silver up 36 cents, 30.79. Copper unchanged, 4.06. Foreign exchange, the U.S. dollar to the euro is unchanged. When was the last time you saw that? Greg, unchanged? Yikes. British pound at 126, but the euro is at 105. That's a long way from the 111, I'm going to say, a month ago. So that's a 5.5% move in a currency, which is, what's that, like a 25, 30% move in a market, Greg? It's unreal.
It's a full year.
It's a full year.
Yeah.
We got Bitcoin up 905, 90,640. Don't worry, we're all going to just make up another fake stock. We're good to go on that one. Matt, what do you got for us, Trevi Weather Sports?
Yeah, good morning. It's currently 6:41 a.m. on November 18th, 2024. As far as traffic, inbound on the Kennedy is at 45 minutes from the Jane Byrne Interchange to O'Hare, and outbound is at 23. Weather in Chicago, patchy fog this morning, 54 degrees at Midway and 50 at O'Hare. Later today, high of around 59 with a chance of showers. Down in Phoenix, 48 degrees, clear skies. Later in the day, high of 68 and sunny skies. In the NFL yesterday, week 11 of the 2024 season, yesterday saw the Packers beat the Bears in a close game of 20-19. This is the Bears' fourth consecutive loss. Lions, though, beat Jaguars.
And counting.
that's just this week. Maybe five next week. Lions beat Jaguars in a blowout 52-6, and Vikings won against Titans 23-13. So I got Chief, back to you.
They've got the Thursday game in Detroit. Detroit is killing everybody. The Thanksgiving game, and then they've got the Thursday game the night after Christmas too, which is kind of, well, I guess the Thursday night games are every week, but they got that one too. So they got two Thursday games coming up in short weeks, and they've already had their bye. So not great future looking here for the Bears.
Nope.
Anyway, we have Mr. Flanagan.
We do indeed.
Good morning, all.
How are you, bud?
Good. How about you, Ted?
So is Tesla going to give you a buzz, or Musk?
Oh, I wait and I wait. The phone never rings.
which is
fine.
I know a couple of Musk lovers that'd love to be on that committee. You know, maybe a couple of them might be on the show, not to mention any names. Why don't we just start by pulling out the one we did 10 years ago and see if it's still any good? We wouldn't want to do that. One of the most interesting... Well, out of the whole list of interesting stuff, Jen, is when we started the COVID situation. They brought some lady retired from government, and she was up there. I don't know if she was on 60 Minutes or what the hell she was on, but starting with was it Eisenhower or somebody? Every year there was a study where they started with this big study. Every year there was a study about what to do if essentially a disease hit and the place was all screwed up, you know, sort of like COVID, right? And it was this big, thick book. I don't know if she said if every year or every 4 years, every new presidential term, somebody went through and updated the book. So most of the stuff was, you know, you did the same stuff every time, what you're going to do, if you're going to make people stay in, if you're going to do all that kind of stuff, you're going to stop people from working. Basically, it was all printed out in the book at what stages things were going to happen. It wasn't a book. It was one of those notebook kind of things. And she goes, every 4 years, people spent a lot of time on it, gave it a lot of thought, and finally when the COVID happened, they didn't look at any of them and just did whatever the hell they did. Feel like it's kind of screwed it all up and didn't do anything like it was in the books.
You know, there's one thing to make those kinds of compendiums of data, but nobody seems to be paid enough or has enough time to read any of it or to sift through the stuff and say, well, this looks like a pretty bad idea. Well, let's not go this far. Or, you know, there isn't any way of sifting the stuff out to make, you know, reasoned decisions about what to do next. So all this collected memory is just, you know, down the toilet.
But when you, I've never been a pilot, but when you get in the plane, even if you've been a pilot for 40 years, the first thing you do is look at your checklist, right?
Yeah.
And yet, why don't we... Oh, no, that's no good. Get rid of that. I mean, why does everything always have to be, you know, so new? I mean, the stuff that's in government, I think, is a lot of it's duplicative. And the way to go about it is to say, okay, this department duplicates another department. Why don't you guys start doing your job? And the people here that we hired here that do that, over time, you know, we'll have some kind of a, I won't say hiring freeze, because that screws up the departments where actually people do leave and go to something else. Some sort of a, if you're in the consumer protection thing and you're chasing down banks, okay, the next opening over for the comptroller to currency, you get the interview for or something. I mean, some intelligent way to do this, rather than, you know, the slash and burn. The same people who love Trump because of the "you're fired" show. All right, you're fired. Well, okay, you know that's TV, right?
Can I do a shout out to pilots really quick?
Sure.
So, I'd say, I don't know, 2014 or 2015, we were looking for a guy, and we had a mutual connection, and said, hey, do you want to come learn or be a clerk and then trade? And he happened to be a pilot, and everything that he did was regimented and pretty much in sequence, and he fit in great. I mean, you could leave him alone and everything would be fine, and he ended up, I think moving on to some position with the power company that, I mean, but he definitely could have stayed trading if he wanted to. But yeah, great, very regimented and checklist oriented, and they don't really mess around when it comes to procedure.
Well, no, because if you screw it up,
a lot on the line. It's one thing to lose money; it's another thing to make a mistake and then lose your life.
Yeah, it's a. Real quick, John, I did drive by the officer's wake yesterday, because I was on my way to my bros. Boy, big crowd there. Even had all the horses out in the street and so forth. And, of course, across the street, they had the obligatory spot where people were being interviewed. You know, people can't wait to get their face on TV. I'm a little miffed at the...
Did the mayor end up showing up?
No, they told the mayor and the governor to not show. I don't you know, if the family wants that, I guess it's fine with the family, but I'm not so sure the police union is, that's something they should be doing. It's not up to them to tell somebody not to come to a wake. But are you accusing a governor of not caring about a policeman getting shot? I mean, come on.
Well, I think the problem, and here I sympathize with families, you know, if the governor and the mayor have already such a tortured relationship with law enforcement, and this, you know, where do you start trying to unravel all that? It's all about their image building. It has nothing to do with giving comfort to the family. And I don't know what kind of comfort Pritzker or Johnson would give any family who lost a police officer in their family. So I think, you know, it's clearly they're doing it not for any kind of generous or sympathetic reasons.
How do you know?
They're not those kind of people. They're
how do you
not.
Know? So if they were Republican, it'd be okay?
It'd be interesting to test.
I don't think any politician who's got that kind of a record has any business pushing their way.
What kind of record? What do you mean? The president meets people at Dover when the bodies come in. You think if it's a president you don't like, he shouldn't do that?
Well, it depends. You know, well, look at what happened with the fiasco with Biden, withdrawal from Afghanistan, and the families there who never, you know, got so much as a phone call from Biden, and clearly blame him personally.
I mean, I don't want to get involved in this. The Democrats
are all wrong.
Saying,
it doesn't matter what side of the party it's on. If this were a Republican pushed, you know, vendetta against the cops, whether it's in their budgets or their refusal to, you know, give them a contract or you name it, and he had a long history of it, I wouldn't, you know, be defending.
The guy's been a mayor for how long? I'm saying there is a protocol.
His pronouncements on the subject, Tom, go back way before he was
mayor. Okay, but I'm saying that there is somewhat of a protocol. I mean, as you know, I abhor this new president, yet he's my president. If somebody got murdered here in Chicago or something, it was a big deal, if somebody got assassinated, I want him there, even though I don't like the guy. There's certain stuff that people do.
But to have him at a family funeral or wake? No. Why does that follow? I just don't get it.
Well, that's up to the family.
It was the thing was a circus event anyway. How many people were there and never met the guy? How many people were giving interviews across the street that didn't want the governor giving an interview? They just wanted their own face on TV. You think that guy was there because he cared about the dude? The guy giving I've watched the guys giving the interviews across the street. Just saying. I mean, let's.
This is the culture we have, Tom, where we're having a police force seems to be, you know, a controversial choice.
Well, I'll tell you what.
It shouldn't be a politicized discussion whatsoever, but it's become one. Well, so.
the policemen's union is trying to flex almost as much power as the teachers' union. I don't like either one of them doing that, to be honest with you. And everybody knows where my heart is. My dad, a policeman. I mean, there's no way you're going to. But I think the force has 95% of the people on there are the best people that are walking. The other five, not so sure about. And the leadership, not so sure about. I mean, I hear stories about, you know, the lieutenants going home instead of, you know, police in the area. I don't see anybody doing anything on the streets. And yet all of a sudden, if there's a call, there's 15 squads there. Where are they? I mean, I think it's amazingly ill-led. Nobody could care less about any kind of online crime. What did Matt Weber say? 85% of the money is stolen online. And if somebody steals $500 out of your ATM, you see a squad car going by and the guy's going to say, What are you asking me for? I mean, defining the role in today's world, the leadership and everything, I think they'd need a total change from top to bottom, to be honest with you. And by the way, 95% of the people there would probably be happy about it because all of a sudden they'd be a way better force.
See, well, if we were dealing with a mayor that had about a 20% approval rating, this discussion would be very different. But the reason he's got a 20% approval rating is because, you know, the people who have family members in the police force who have any kind of political affiliation that isn't as red as you can get, the mayor sees as an enemy. And maybe he doesn't think he comes across that way, but he certainly does. That's why he's got a 20% approval rating.
I'm not giving him any kind of excuses whatsoever.
He wanted to go to that way because he needed to boost that approval rating. I don't think it's any less crass than that.
I don't know. Why should the
family do his bidding? So, because he's the one who has the benefit somehow. Screw that.
I think, so if Trump gets in and for some reason he has 20% approval rating, and 15 bodies show up at Dover, Delaware, he's not allowed to go.
But I think Dover Air Force Base is a military site. It's not a Blake Lamb funeral home. So
right.
It's not the same thing.
Okay, I mean, I think there's some things people do in their official capacity that
transcend. Right, and the family in this case, I don't think has any reason to be acting in an official capacity just because the mayor needs their cooperation.
Well, then I think they shouldn't have the people being
the family more than the family.
Okay, but I think the people across the street being interviewed should have shut up. Then
the TV stations, Tom. You know, I mean, I'm sorry that. They turn it into a political event because they know.
Well, it wouldn't be a political event if everybody refused to talk to them.
Everything's a political event.
Yeah, I know. I mean, that's my point. I mean, what I'd rather not have is if the mayor can't show up, and everybody knows.
Well, the one side thinks it's theater, and the other side thinks it's part of the job.
I bet you the guy being interviewed probably was the head of the police department. Now he's making a political event, right?
Well, this is the climate we're in. I'm not excusing that kind of behavior either. But anyway. I think the mayor should have enough sense when he's dealing with his constituents and he has this kind of image problem that to not use a family wake as an opportunity to, you know, boost himself. That's only the only way I can, you know, the only gloss I can put on knowing how this guy has behaved and how his track record is so awful on the subject, Tom.
I'm just saying, as long as he's mayor, there are things you do in your official capacity. And it used to be going to a dead policeman's wake was one of them. Now you're saying it's not. Okay, fine. Maybe that's the way it is going to be going forward. But the idea that somehow they're personally responsible for this guy being killed, that's the message is being leaked out there somehow.
It's not quite that hard, I don't think. But they certainly have contributed to the climate that makes this kind of stuff so frequent.
Well, okay.
The only way you could really know is if, call it, the mayor was extremely pro-police and then this stuff still happened, would he be welcome, or pro-police meaning they get what they want in terms of support in personnel and money, if they got what they want and then the mayor or the governor still weren't welcome at the That's the only way you could really know.
Well, when you look at this, and again, I can't believe I'm seeing kind of both sides of this story. You can't look at a police department that has... When can you retire, Jan? 50, 52, 55, somewhere in there?
55, I think.
Okay, so if everybody retires at 55 and starts getting a check, which nobody else in society does, by the way, at age 55, I think you're still pretty good for a lot of stuff. Now, whether you should be on the expressways hauling people out of cars that are shooting at you, maybe not. But the idea that there's no job for you in the police department at age 55 is insane. So if you have all these people retire and you're paying them anyway, the police being pissed at you because you're not hiring more new guys for the same spot, so now you're paying two people for the same spot, the rest of us can't pay that, can we?
No.
So, I mean, what's the solution there? Retire at 55, you're not getting a check till you're 65.
Well, this is the pension nightmare, and it's not just the police it's going to take politicians smarter than the ones we have to fix it.
Well, I mean, without even talking about the police here, like I said, most of whom I played ball with, everybody, I never met a bad guy. But I mean, the idea in California, the prison for the—I seem to remember this once, and I don't want to lob it out there because it's probably wrong by now. But at one point, when California had the three strikes and out deal, they had so many people in jail that the prison guard population was like. Wasn't their vote almost as big as the teachers' union or something?
Yeah, yeah.
And so, but I think you get to retire, in 20 years? 20 or 25?
Well, the teachers, if it's age 55 or 20 years of service, whichever comes first. So I'm not defending that, or for the police either, Tom. Believe me.
Well, but I'm saying, whether or not, I mean, if you ask me, hey, what do you got business giving an opinion? And whether or not one should people... First of all, I wouldn't want to be a prison guard. I think 20 years would be kind of enough, being a prison guard, right? And I could see somebody not wanting to do that anymore. Now, whether you give them another job in government or in the state until their retirement age, I have no problem with that. But all I know is that if you got a whole bunch of people retiring at age 42... and you're going to pay them till they're 90, which people seem to live now, or some do, you can't pay people 70 years for 20 years work. I know the math. Now, how you solve that, John, I'm not, you know...
Running out of platform and then running away from that platform that you should defund the police, not reduce their funding, defund them and get rid of them, which a lot of crazy people have been saying. Brandon Johnson among them.
Well, I mean, you're going to give the world over to the drug lords? I don't think we want to do that necessarily.
Well, that's, of course, you know, but you got to track the mayor's comments about this, and his kind of reckless treatment of this subject, it deserves more scrutiny than it gets. He doesn't really, this is the only way I think people feel that they can tell the mayor exactly what they think of him.
Well, the people that
he didn't get a resounding mandate in the election, that's for sure, the way the crazy election works here.
Well, I guess what I'm really trying to say here in a stumbling way is the policemen that I know in my family and people that I know now I play ball with and stuff are some of the finest people on earth. They deserve the best leadership, the best equipment, the best everything, and I don't think they're getting it. Just saying.
I'll agree with you 100%.
I mean, where's Tom Selleck when you need him? From Blue Bloods. but this isn't...
Well, Shatner's who plays the cop.
Yeah.
That's one of the hokiest of Shatner roles.
Now, if we had Andy Dickinson on, of course, now that'd be all right. But, God. But, I mean, it's all about leadership. But, you know, I mean, Mayor Daley, it's always been a force that had some issues with it. It's always been like that. I mean, when my dad had his, this is so frightening to me. That's why I bring up the Simpson Bowles thing, and the two new knuckleheads going in there. When my dad had his cancer surgery, and they thought they could do some Ben Casey brain surgery, and of course, they couldn't do anything, so they just they covered it over with a plate to relieve the pressure. But they stayed on the force, and because he was in the Army as a, he was in the Signal Corps, so he was in radio and everything. So they said, okay, obviously you can't go back out on the street where you're fighting people with a plate in your head. They let him become a dispatcher. And the first day he was on the job, the phone started ringing. There's people like you, John, attorneys, saying, hey, when you get a call that there's an accident or something, especially if it's an accident, if you call us first before you send out the squad car, where we can essentially meet the squad car at the accident to try and get the liability case, we'll give you $5. Well, how many of these would he have processed in a day? $5 is like a lot of dough back in 1955, for God's sake, right? What was a beer? Oh, yeah. 40 cents? Maybe? 25 cents? And he and my mom had their meeting, and they said, no, that's not us. And he turned it down. Years and years later, it was like 3 years ago, 4 years ago, Brandon Johnson, there was some guy in the dispatch office getting paid by somebody to give him a heads up when there's an accident, right? And Brandon Johnson said, I'm shocked. I can't believe this is going on in my department. It sounded like the guy in Casablanca. It was going on in 1954. You think it's still not going on?
You ever see the X video on, it was the of the tow trucks fighting?
Oh, yeah.
They were ramming each other because they got angry of who was given priority.
Well, my uncle was a former Cook County police guy, and he was undercover, right, for a long time. And in Cicero, when they were busting up a lot of those bars, the gambling and all that stuff was in those places. And so he ended up knowing, you know, Joe Taco and all those guys were from Chicago Heights, the mob guys. And so when he moved out to Chicago Heights, he'd go to breakfast. He'd have breakfast with the mob guys. But, you know, he told me, he goes, Sam, Grandpa told me once, you can be friends with these guys, just don't ever take a dime for them and don't do anything for them. And then, because then you're just, once you take a dime, you're in.
Right.
But he said, right. He goes, and there were people that the voting, or the mayoral, this is back before Chicago Heights, now looks like it does now, was a pretty vibrant area, a lot of Italians. And he said, the mayor's race, I mean, they were shooting people in the mayor's race. I don't know, why are they, what's going on out there? He goes, these people that have the towing companies that have, ever there was an accident on the I-80 or something, or 294, to be that towing company is so lucrative. These guys are fighting for those jobs because each mayor has his own group of guys that he's going to give all those jobs to. I mean, politics is you know, Jan, if you don't have people like that in your family or people that give you these stories, you kind of have no idea how bad or deep it really is. I mean, it's a big deal. I mean, what does it cost to have, you know, 15 wreckers that are capable of pulling a semi off a toll road? I mean, the investment, what do those things cost? $250,000 a piece? And all of a sudden somebody else gets in power and you're out and you're sitting there with all that stuff sitting on your lot? That's not going to.
As that thing is, Tom, too. I mean, Chicago Heights, when it was a vibrant place, you know, it had always, you know, at least in the 20th century, a pretty corrupt place. Now that it's really taken, you know, a couple steps down on the economic ladder, it's probably more corrupt than ever, just because the pickings are slimmer and there's more fighting, you know, more riding on who gets the gravy. So, well, I would suspect that, you know, it's worse than it ever was.
Well, there was a guy down there on restaurant Alcazar's, which has been, I think, long gone, but it was this great Italian restaurant, and he was something. His brother was the police chief or something. he was like a mob guy. But I mean, you know, stuff happened, right?
It was easier to do this on a bigger stage in a suburb, or, you know, like a Cicero or Chicago Heights or other places like that, where it was easy to get control politically and hold on to it. And to take over every, you know, it's like Tiffany Henger, Dalton or something now, where you get this empire that you can create, and the police are often, you know, it's one of the entrees to getting in and holding power. There's a reason why there's been a long history of movies like L.A. Confidential and Training Day, where it's presumed that the police leadership is fundamentally corrupt. So, I mean, this is, people are kind of, they don't like to think about it, they don't like to see it, but they never have disbelieved in it. So this taps into something very, you know, common and hardwired in people's, you know, experience with the way that the police have acted. And that's, you know, something that maybe is inflated in some cases. Maybe it isn't, you know, emphasized enough. So I grant you that in the Chicago Police Department, any police department, you've got tremendous opportunities and temptations for corruption.
And well, my stepfather, his dad was a Chicago policeman. He retired. I think he was like 65 or whatever. He was up there, but there used to be a park district police way back in the day, John, which I never remembered. Do you?
Oh yeah, the park system, you know, the way it was divided up in the city too, it was a bigger operation in some ways than the ward divisions. There was more money, I think, in it per square foot than there was in other places.
Well, there were the park did all kinds. I mean, there was woodworking shops, there were cooking shops. The park district was almost a small school district in a lot of regards. Plus, every park had how many softball leagues, how many this leagues, how many everything. I mean, it was a pretty vibrant operation.
And the park commission. I mean, the South Park. It was the West. They were these regional fiefdoms that overlaid all the ward boundaries.
But I mean, a big park like Horner Park, even Mount Greenwood. I mean, you probably had, you know, 5-6 people, and then you had daycare center, you know, all kinds of stuff in these places. I mean, it was a big deal. But anyway, the Park District Police evidently got. There must have been something where they were shown to like be doing nothing except like hanging around, and they essentially disbanded them and moved everybody into the Chicago Police. So my step grandfather ended up a Chicago policeman, and he'd tell me stories. I go to the nursing home and see him, and he'd give me stories. He goes, you know, I had a couple of partners. Because, you know, he was kind of a strange old Irish duck, but kind of grumpy. But he was straight as the day is long. You know, church every Sunday. He wouldn't take a dime from anybody. One of those kind of guys. And he says, you know, I had partners. I'd never let them out of the car. He goes, I get these younger partners, and every time they went into somebody's house, they're walking out with like a bottle of booze or something. He goes, every you know, check for a break-in, nobody's home, walk in, the guy's walking out with something. He goes, those guys, I just said, you man the radio, I'll go in. He goes, but you know, the weird part, he goes, they never turn any of these guys in or anything like that. I mean, they just were there, and you had to sort of deal with them. But again, people are people. And whenever there's money to be made, I mean, policemen made like nothing. I think my dad made, I'm going to say in 1956, his last year, John, was it even $2,200, $2,300, something like that?
Yeah, my uncle was a beat cop in Hyde Park first. Then he went into loop traffic, and he directed traffic at Clark and Madison for like 18 years, all through the 50s and into the 60s. And I remember just hearing him say one time that he was making about $3,000. This is probably like 1960, 62,
yeah,
maybe.
Yeah, it's about the same number then.
So, yeah, and you can see, I mean, what he even had to do was a traffic cop.
Well, I'll bet the people
wouldn't want to have anything to do with, because there were homeless people then, there were vagrants, there were, you know, there was crime, there was road rage. All these things happened, you know, while he was directing traffic.
I think the people that get to park around City Hall in those places without, you know, there's no parking, I think there was a Christmas gift for a lot of that.
Oh, yeah. I mean, this is, and you know, you had, you know, I'm sure my uncle, you know, who worked events too, like when there'd be a play at the Schubert or the opera was on that night, and he, you know, worked those details to get the cabs in and out and everything else. I'm sure there was, here's a five, here's, let me park here for 10 minutes while I go and look for somebody.
Yeah, yeah.
And if you knew the person, you know, you would do it. But in a, you know, you almost have to have something like that to keep things functioning.
Little something.
I don't have such a problem with that. This is peanuts, really.
Yeah, I mean, I think the corruption at that level, I think at some level is almost makes things work better.
Well, yeah, it's like retail politics or something. But he, you know, he never said very much about his colleagues on the force. But there were some he had absolutely no use for.
Oh yeah,
even in loop traffic, because he saw what was going on, and he you know, publicly showed no sympathy for it. Privately, he couldn't say very much about it. I can see why. But, you know, I had a cousin who was a cop, and I don't want to go into that today, but I mean, it's kind of a dirty business looking at it from my cousin's standpoint. And, you know, it ended up, you know, in a violent death. So I think it's, you know, there's a very fine line when you got, you know, people working against forces that they can easily be co-opted into them gradually. And depending on how much resistance they have, or if they have any resistance, they become part of the problem, not the solution.
So. Well, John, what do you say we change topics here. We're to Paul, Paul Harvey, page two. I sent out a bunch of stuff to everybody last night, and maybe if Matt wants to send some of this out, he can. But I've got essentially three things, and I probably should have added a fourth, but I didn't. One of them is the restaurant executives can't wait. This is a CNBC article by Amelia Lucas. Amelia is my grandmother's name. I like that. Her name is Molly, or what they call her. Maybe she's just Amelia. Restaurant executives can't wait for 2025 after slow traffic and wave of bankruptcies. Restaurant executives are excited to put 2024 behind them and start the new year. This year, restaurant bankruptcy filings soared, traffic declined, and same-store sales disappointed. But green shoots, like improving sales, have given executives hope the next year will be different. Okay, so when you dig through the article, which I'm not going to read, they basically say it looks like the pace of price increases is going down a little bit. They didn't say prices are going down. They said the pace of price increases are going down, and it looks like people are getting a little more income, and they're hoping that one income surpasses the other, and we start to come off a bottom here where the income versus expense piece starts to improve. Now, from their lips to God's ears, I hope they're right. Now, you compare that, the other two things I sent, John, was Federal Reserve Bank in New York, as household debt and credit report shows that we are up to, we being the U.S. of A., where are we? The household debt increased by $147 billion, this is in the last quarter, to $17.94 trillion. Non-housing debt is wider than it ever has been. Housing debt, let's see, the mortgage balances rose by $75 billion from the previous quarter to reach $12.59 trillion at the end of September. While growth in income has outpaced debt a little bit, elevated balance levels continue to reveal stress for many households. In other words, if we get a month or two where income is increasing, going past the debt increase going up, or the price index, do we have a couple of good months, or are we going to start heading? I think that we start seeing more inflation again because of the money supply in the last few months, but maybe I will be wrong. Credit card balances increased by $24 billion to $1.17 trillion. Auto loan balances saw an $18 billion increase and stood at $1.64 trillion. One thing I do know, John, because I keep track of, even though I'm not looking for a truck, I look at the used truck prices. They're soaring again. There's not enough new ones on the market, and the new ones are even 2 years old. They want $35,000. If you want to spend $10,000 for a truck, good luck. Good luck. I mean, you're paying, and the old ones are running out. You can't find one running under 180,000 miles on it, all full of rust, and they still want $12,000 for the thing. I mean, it's crazy. So this number is out there. The other one is Warren Buffett, for those that don't watch him too much. The one thing that he looks at, he claims he looks at it. The Buffett indicator is market cap to GDP. Now, he uses the Wilshire here, okay? So the Wilshire 5000 index, which pretty much covers every stock that's in the market, you would think with 5,000 stocks. He compares the Wilshire 500 and the GDP of the United States. He divides one into the other. The Wilshire 500, blah, blah, blah. The product is, has gained largely to Warren Buffett's endorsements. A Fortune magazine interview back in 2001, Buffett referred to it as probably the best single measure of where valuations stand at any given moment. The statement has drawn attention to the indicator's potential, divides the total market value of all publicly traded stocks in the country by the country's gross domestic product. Okay, so now the mean is roughly 100%, which means the total value of all the stocks is equal to the GDP. Now, the GDP is, John, $21 billion or something like that? Let me find it here. I'll find it exactly. I'll go to my world debt clock. But it's less than the national debt now, which is not a good sign. But the GDP is... But anyway, it's up to a record high here other than maybe 2000. And now, that doesn't mean you can't... I can't emphasize enough that you cannot trade like this stuff. You can't sit there and go, oh my God, the market's too high, and buy puts today and expect everybody else in the world that have been listening to Stacks and Jacks and come flying in to buy the puts 10 minutes after you. Gross domestic product is 29.3, so call it. All right, so where was I in this thing? Buffett. And now in 2000, we reached 1.56%. Actually, 1.5% would be that ratio. 2007, we were at 105. Now we're at 200. So we are incredibly higher.
208.
Yeah, we're 208. We're incredibly higher than we were back then. So I'll ask the both of you guys. Now, if all of a sudden this is the bottom, like the restaurant people said, and we start moving forward and the GDP starts marching up in real terms, and the market stays steady for a year or two, and this comes down, I guess we all kept our hands in the boat. Nobody rocked the boat didn't sink. It looks like the number, the graph number here or chart is still pointing almost straight up. Greg, you first. I don't think it's tradable, but it's something to look at and go, what the hell? But now, what do you do with it?
You know, going back to what we were talking about earlier, it's what happens when things go wrong. In terms of Buffett's business, he has that. He has the insurance companies actually giving him money every quarter or
yep.
every month or whatever, and he tries to keep that float. It's called the insurance float as cash or cash equivalents, and most recently, I think his cash equivalents are somewhere around $300 billion.
Well, you get sold like almost all his Apple stock and a bunch of stuff.
He's reduced a lot of Apple and reduced a lot of Bank of America, and he's got a lot of cash now and covers the float and then more. So, in terms of what's predictive or what are they planning for? Well, they're taking in a lot of money. A, because the insurance premiums are going up, and then B, they have some in reserve, so that totals almost a third of their market cap, or maybe more now, is in cash. So I don't know what the indicator means.
But he owns stock in the insurance companies. He doesn't fund any. He's not involved in their operation.
He's the owner of it. So if they have to pay out a bunch, he's on the hook. So I think that's why that cash
I'm going to say. Actually, I don't know this, and I don't know where you find it. John, maybe you do somewhere between the repairs. I mean, 2 years ago, didn't every auto insurance company say they lost all kinds of money because of the cost of repairs? The hurricanes have to have hurt. And I know it's a localized area, but...
Yeah, everything that hurt, but their premiums are high, too.
Yeah,
so.
I get that, but, I mean, Audrey's area, where they had the southwest side of Chicago, and I mentioned this a couple times, that it is this localized hailstorm last spring, but even before that there was another one, but the one last spring was really awful. I take the pooch for a walk every week, and everybody's getting a new roof. And
the cynical part of me says they can't wait for those kind of storms because A, it's an it's an excuse to raise rates, and B, I mean, you can deny coverage later. I mean, it's like a temporary loss, but a big win for, you know, to call it the next 5 years.
Well, I'll tell you what, if my rates have always been so low at State Farm, I've been there for God knows how many years, that if I walked out tomorrow and bought one of these new SUVs like Kenny Polcari did, and somebody rear-ends my ass, and it's a $25,000 bill to put the sensors and the cameras. I don't think I've ever paid State Farm $25,000 total. That's a lot of dough.
Yeah, but a lot of people get in accidents. A lot of people have higher rates. I mean,
I'm just saying,
you're
that's a lot of dough.
You're the kind of person they want because everything's overpriced for you because you're not really getting in accidents.
Well, I'm just saying, at some point, I don't think there's people Audrey knows in her neighborhood that have gotten $90,000 roofs. Those people never paid $90,000 in their insurance ever. It never will.
That's why it's good to be the premium taker.
Well, I'm saying I think these prices have shocked those guys a little bit too. What do you think, John?
I think this is the problem with the restaurant industry. I'd like to hear Greg's take on what's happening with foot traffic in restaurants. I mean, I can see in a few places that I go to anymore, and I don't go to them as frequently as I used to. They've cut back on hours. The people sitting in the booths are, you know, much smaller numbers than they used to be. And when you have things like, you know, insurance issues for things you absolutely have to keep a job, like a car and to keep it insured, and a house that you have to live in, and all these other enormous expenses that people are clearly now borrowing in order to meet. This is why credit card, you know,
That's the first thing we're talking about. Yeah, why the debt's going up so much.
So what's going to get squeezed? I mean, it's going to be the things that just are not absolutely essential for your well-being. And it will be things like entertainment. It will be, you know, dining out, or dining out in, you know, as frequently or as lavishly as you used to, and that's going to be one of the first things to go. And unfortunately, it's going to be one of the last things to come back, until, you know, there's some kind of, you know, readjustment of all these other expenses that are bankrupting people now. And then let's leave healthcare off the table for the moment.
Oh yeah, yeah,
because,
and that's The grill on the table. Let's leave them off the table for a second.
Yeah, it's so bad. Let's just look away from it.
Yeah,
but I think it's not going to happen in 2025. And I don't know, Greg. Are you seeing? Is it all pointing in one direction from your experience?
Any increase in foot traffic is pretty significant, considering foot traffic is really what you're looking for in terms of real estate value. And. And from the real estate value, you can kind of back into what the restaurant's going to be worth. Foot traffic is positive, and you would want to look at the demographic of that foot traffic, too. I would say the kind of customers that are walking around are going to be important, but the volume number is going to be more important in terms of how do you value the space and how do you value the business. I'd say... In the loop, you know, any increase in foot traffic is going to be good because it's been so depressed. What affects that most is the policies of the, call it, larger organizations that have bigger offices down here, meaning Uber Freight, like you were talking about last week, Chief, or those groups like Amazon who have big offices, and maybe they come in 3 days a week instead of 2 days a week, or maybe they come in 4 days a week instead of 2 days a week. Now you see that in the foot traffic, and that's obviously super bullish for any potential that, you know, the landlords and or commercial space operators are looking for.
Greg, if somebody, for those that don't know, Greg is affiliated with the Ceres Cafe over in his relatives that work there and so forth, in the Board of Trade building, where you used to have a gazillion people, place was always packed. Well, now, if all of a sudden, if I were to tell you, Stocks and Jacks has 200 people, and we just lease space in the Board of Trade building, which is amazingly available, normal firm, 200 people, can you tell me, wow, that's going to mean, especially in the wintertime, that's 10 breakfasts a day, 20 lunches, and 25 drinks a night. I mean, unless they're all, you know,
one of the
Mormons
advantages,
or some Mormons or something, can you pretty much tell what that's going to give you?
Yeah. In foot traffic, you can pretty much tell, as long as the tenants are similar, meaning corporate, call it middle office, back office, or in the past we had a lot of traders. Excuse me. The driver has always been foot traffic.
Now, what the place like?
An interesting about what was I going to say about the Board of Trade is we're actually set up for overcapacity, meaning a normal office building, if you know you've got 40 floors, a million square feet, or whatever it is, you can kind of value that. The Board of Trade was set up in such that the middle floors, call it 4 to 8, weren't exactly office space. The middle floors were trading.
With 2,000 people
trading floors, so between the trading floors, that's a lot more dense than, call it, anything else around here. So we were set up over capacity, meaning the basement was more like a cafeteria for those time sensitive customers, meaning you have to go up to the trading floor, you have to be, so you don't necessarily have time to sit down and eat, but you still don't want to, you know, bring something, or you just want to grab something quick. So the space at the Board of Trade is really more unique in that their overcapacity, or they're set up to overserve what the normal, call it, food operation would be in an office building because of that density in the fourth to eighth floors.
Well, you're talking about just the food. I'm talking about the like the restaurant bar area. You also right on the way to the train for a lot of people, so that's a plus. I mean, all kinds of things.
Right, right. And reflected, we keep track of kind of who scans in the building. So it's nice to have that option. And really, a lot of people have are not working in the building anymore. But the way that you can model kind of revenues is almost lockstep with the swipe-ins for the building you're in. And that's commercial. I'd imagine for something like a McDonald's, you'd keep track of the amount of cars that pass by the nearest intersection, or it's a function of traffic.
Well, you never, if you're observant, every day you observe more. And what I noticed, Jen, is I had to go out to see a client. What the hell was it? Way the hell out on, was it LaGrange Road or someplace? I mean, I was way south. And, you know what I noticed driving out there? I figured, okay, I'm going to go and wherever I had to see first, I said, it's okay, I'll just blow through a McDonald's on the way out and grab a coffee or something, and or whatever it would be. I don't care who it was, Dunkin' Donuts or whatever. Not one of the McDonald's or Dunkin' Donuts were on the west side of the street because they're trying to get everybody coming in. And there's a center line there, so you can't get across it. So everybody, it was designed for everybody coming in, Greg, driving into the expressway, driving into the train. So all the places for coffee were on the other side of the streets, so the guys heading in the morning could stop. Evidently, nobody stops on the way home from work. You stop on the way in or something.
And they've known about that probably as a strategic advantage.
There's careful study going on there.
Without a doubt.
Yep.
Hey, when Audrey comes on, and we'll talk a little bit, there's kind of a fourth indicator here is the home price indicator, which you brought up, John. Now, the reason why I'm bringing all this stuff up is because you guys, Greg is a trader, and you're learning about the trading, but you have your pulse on the vein of the world and always have. You know, Carl keeps warning about these debt levels and this stock price valuation level and these home price levels as being danger signs. And I'm never going to disagree, or else I wouldn't have talked about them all morning. Yet, I've been around here for a while. You know what, Greg? If you could have told me that the rally started in August, whatever day it was, in 1982, and you would have told me that the crash of 87 would have happened on a Friday, I sure as hell would have positioned a lot differently. Would happen on a Wednesday or a Thursday, guess what? I'd have been a millionaire many times over. Didn't work out that way because it happened on an expiration weekend and a lot of stuff that was protecting me expired and I couldn't get the new stuff. So timing on this stuff, how many years has it been? Damn near 100. You still can't tell me definitively why the crash in October 1929 was on that Monday and it wasn't the week before or the week after. I mean, yes, everything pointed to something bad happening. The market was way overvalued. You had whole sections of the population, agriculture and so forth, that had been really in a depression for 10 years. You had a few people with a real lot of dough. Actually, the difference between the 1% and the rest in 1929 was probably the only time it's worse than it is today. Now, all these danger signs are there, yet why didn't it happen a week before? Why didn't it happen a week after? Now, could we be, like the restaurant people say,
they didn't examine the tick data.
Well, I mean, now today, is it going to be that we're just going to slug along here for 5 years as people's incomes gradually meet up to where these prices and home prices and market is? That would be the ideal scenario. What can government do to try and make that happen rather than something bad happening the other way? How much has foreign people gotten involved in it? I mean, if Trump really succeeds at beating up on China, and oh, by the way, even though the Republicans seem to think differently, Biden never really let up on China, did they? I mean, John, I'll ask you. I mean, he was just as nasty to China as Trump was in a lot of ways.
Well, it verbally, I think, and maybe behind the scenes too, but I think that's been part of China's strategy with the other powerful politicians on both sides of the aisle.
But Trump didn't ban individual companies and put the lady in jail like they did in Canada and his... I'm saying there wasn't much difference, what I'm saying. You're right. One might have been a little stronger than the other, and I don't know enough to debate that with you. But the point being is, if we... I guess my theme this morning is no man can do one thing. You know, you raise taxes on booze, you cut this back. You raise parking taxes, it costs a Tripoli 5-6 people a night that don't stop for a drink because they don't want to pay their park. You can't just do one thing. I mean, I'm looking for my clients... what could possibly happen? And I'm a little nervous about Trump putting the screws even more on China, not because I like what China's doing, I sure as hell don't, will that either put them in a position where they can't hang in there money-wise and all this stuff implodes and there's people here that have invested over there, and oh, by the way, they show up with, you know, $100 billion or $200 billion less than an auction, where in order for the people here to cover it, the rate... I mean, I don't know that... any of these little things that people say they're doing couldn't be a catalyst without them even thinking it through. I guess that's my concern here. Before we go to Odd, why don't you guys opine on that a little bit? I'm just concerned you got to be careful what you do here because things are pretty tender is all I'm saying.
Well, and China's doing a pretty good job right now of letting its, you know, ship sink. And if you were to really go at them whole hog, I think they'll respond in maybe the only way left to them, and that's through some military attack. It's the only strategy left to them if they're ability to compete.
Well, but forget that for a second. I mean, is there some secret group here, be it endowments, be it somebody invested all that money over there? I mean, now if all of a sudden that's officially lost rather than just non-officially lost, is that going to be a problem here? I'm just looking for somebody lighting the charcoal in the grill here. Is that something I should be worried about? I guess is my question. I don't know.
I'm trying to be worried about it.
Yeah, go ahead, Greg.
So, whether it be with money strategy or military strategy or whatever, there's static strategies and there's dynamic strategies. And what you're talking about is a big event happening, and the strategies that benefit most from big events, or at least what you'd like to have in place, are usually those static strategies. The dynamic ones, meaning, are you going to be able to buy that insurance? Are you going to be able to, move that division of tanks? Are you going to be able to launch those missiles? That stuff gets tested and shaken a bunch during, larger events. So having the static strategies against those large, call them black swans or earth shakers or whatever you want to call it, meaning large market moves and money or missile launches and military, what you'd like to have against those are more of the static hedges versus the dynamic hedges. So whether that means more cash in the bank as a strategy or whether that means tunnels as a military or underground silos as a military, the ones that would benefit most from large market shifts or military shifts or whatever are usually the static strategy, something you already have in place that's already ready to go, rather than something that depends on...
Well, I mean, some of that stuff is, to be honest, way above any of our pay grades. Well, but not to talk about it.
An individual level.
What I'm saying is, if it's something simple... this is the stuff that maybe we got to go to Audrey here in a second, but like there was a gentleman on TV last week, and he said one of the catalysts he thinks is the market really having a problem with is because this inflation is creeping back a little bit. The 10 and 30 year rate is creeping up, and it's creeping up now. It's not even creeping up. We're at 4.7 today in the 30, and we're 4.48 on the 10, which is a big move here. Those are 1% moves, 1.5% moves. He's one of these days we're liable to get an auction where all of a sudden we're 6 or 6.5. Now China could cause that by not showing up, or that I'm more worried about that than I can't predict them bombing Taiwan. I mean, I have no idea, but That's what we're talking
about.
But
that's the same thing in general, where something very unexpected happens and everybody's scrambling. If you're depending on a dynamic hedge or a dynamic strategy, you've got to build in a bigger cushion because it's not going to happen. In terms of insurance for like hailstorms or whatever, if that's not in place,
hey,
you're not
saying, hey, Matt, can you send Audrey a new link or Zoom? I won't open.
I'm on.
You're on.
Submitted. There we go.
I need a new Zoom link as well, but I'm on.
You're on. Okay.
Is it? I don't think it's Audrey's day.
Okay. Well, then she can listen in, and she can help. We're trying to figure out. We went through all this list of I sent you the stuff of I'll say numbers that appear to be stretched. Yes. Housing prices might be another one that you and Aud can talk about. Question is it going to be a problem? Can we grow out of it like the restaurant people say, or not? I mean, what are things that I have to look for as an investor for other people, and you guys have to look for as an investor for yourselves and the listeners? What can you look for? I mean, could China be a cause? If we put a thumb on them too much, are they not going to show up for an auction? And all of a sudden, instead of a 4.5-point 10-year rate, it's 5.5. And is that enough to topple things? I don't think so. But I mean, what around, you know, could happen? Because before you came on, I was talking about the times I've been in the business. I have no idea why I wasn't here in 29, why it happened that Monday or the Monday before or the Monday after. And I have no idea why the crash 87 happened on that Friday and not the one before or the one after. I mean, it's, you know, people will say they had it all figured out, but I don't believe them. I mean, if the market price of stocks or houses come flying down, you and Audrey have never disagreed with me that the price of houses have outstripped people's income for the last 10 years easy, maybe since 2008. But that doesn't mean you want to short houses tomorrow, because just because you read it doesn't mean everybody else is going to read it in a minute. I guess what can we do on the show collectively to keep our eye peeled and know kind of when that's happening, so I can buy puts for all my clients at the exact right minute, right? And Jack can go short the spoo at the last. You guys can short the spoos at the exact right minute, and we'll take all the listeners and the clients right with us.
If we know that, let's just go to Vegas. One roll of the dice, it's done. Done.
But I mean, but these things.
There's no answer for it, I don't think.
But they go on for. But, go ahead, John.
No, I have always wondered. You know, what's the exquisite, you know, timing or, you know, machinery in the background that made, you know, a Black Tuesday in 1929, or the, you know, the crash in 87, or any number of financial panics over the years, and. I think there's definitely a connection with information and the speed of information transmittal and what that information is and how it's been maybe cooked in the process too. But ultimately, I don't think even afterwards you can say for sure, this is what happened, this triggered that, and then this. No, it's never become clear to me in anything I've read or that I can understand about these events that they are, you know, part of some kind of process that always had this outcome looming on the horizon, and you were inching, you know, inevitably towards it. I don't think it works that way, and especially because there's so much emotion involved in these things to begin with, right. And emotions are not predictable and not rational, and you can't chart them in a sensible way or predict what they're going to do or how they're going to be triggered. So I think there's an essential mystery in all of this, and maybe we have to kind of understand that, and it doesn't make it any easier, I guess, to function in the day-to-day market looking at all this stuff and worrying about it. But when can you not worry about it? You always have to worry about it. So I just don't think there's any kind of process that you can use as a past guide to what's happening, and here's the time frame, and this is the line we're moving along, and next will be this, and then will come this. No, I don't buy that, really.
Well, one example I can throw out there is, and you've alluded to this before, Nance, because obviously, and so is Audrey. You guys are, you have your finger on your market, like I do this one. And when Robin, our dear departed Robin, went out to, she moved to Far Hills, New Jersey. It was a long time ago. When she moved out there, the big company out there of all places, John, was Lucent. I don't know if you knew that or not. You know, Lucent was essentially the huge successor to what, Western Electric, that became something else.
That's what
else
I thought, too. Illinois Bell or whatever.
Yeah, and then somehow they had their headquarters was in New Jersey. I don't know how the hell they got there. Well, when the place went under, Max, her son, who's now, you know, big good guy in Wall Street, he was, you know, he was seventh grade or fifth grade or something. They lived in an area where probably 3-4 houses on the block, and it wasn't a good economic time, were Lucent people, and they all got canned. Well, Max shows up for school the next year. Instead of 25 kids in a class, there's like 12. And oh, by the way, all this for sale sizes went up, and the housing prices dropped by like 30% in a month, because who the hell wanted to buy them? There's no Lucent's not around anymore. Now we've gone through an amazing period, you guys in Autumn, she's listening, where the home prices, certainly in your guys' area and other places, have hung in there because it's so restricted, because people can't necessarily, they're never going to leave their house because Nance got them into a 3% mortgage 3 years ago. And you know, there's something really badass there. But what happens if you're in one of these areas where instead of 20 houses and Audrey scrambling to find a new house to put somebody in, what if there's 100 houses available and people, by the way, have to move? I think those prices could drop like a rock from the current ones, because right now you guys are dealing with people are selling one for a high price and buying another one for a little higher price or something. What if that all tumbled, Nance, and all of a sudden you had 200 houses for sale with 10 miles around Orland? I don't think they stay here, do you?
Well, that goes back to 2008. I mean, you're going to have, because John hit the key and what he said. He said it's, you can't predict someone who's emotional, and fear triggers emotion like nothing else. And you don't understand what the person fears, and it's not rational. Fear is, it's just not rational. And what you're saying is, like, you know, homes start selling and stuff like that, and then that's where we're going to have a lot of chaos going on, when people become irrational. If they fear something, it starts, and it could be anything at all that sets it off. And like we can't, like John's saying, we can't predict that. We don't know when that moment will start. Each individual person fears something. 10 people could hear the same thing, and 3 would say, oh my God, I'm going to throw all my money in the market and I'm going to make a fortune, and everybody else is running from it like a mad people.
What are you saying, Rod? I hear you're with us.
I guess if my Zoom browser wanted to be updated this morning, and I hadn't even had coffee yet.
Well, everybody knows you can't update your browser without coffee. Everybody knows that.
How did we all end up on the same day?
I know.
It's a good thing. It's a rare opportunity to get knowledge from everybody, the way I look at it. Well, you know, interesting story. My bro Dan, who's the president of PTI, came out with a theory a long time ago, because he, you know, he deals with more of the people in the IRAs necessarily than I do at PTI. And Rod, you know, I think you were still working down here all the time back then, and Dan came up with a story I've mentioned over the last several weeks a couple times, where I run into people that they need, you know, $1.5 million in their IRA or something. Well, the market's been so good to them that they might have 2.5 in there or 2.25, and they honestly, which is what I normally can't understand, but they almost don't care if the market takes 250 back. It's almost like they don't believe they deserve it in the first place or whatever. But if the market starts to go down, you know, what would make that person who you can't talk into, I won't say selling, but even hedging any of it at $2.5 million, become a seller at $1.5 million? And I always wondered that, and Aud and I, we've talked about this for years and years. But Dan came out one day with an interesting, he goes, people, there's a number that they have to have in their mind for their retirement or whatever it is. And if you can lose $1 million from 2.5 to 1.5, but the 1.5's the big number. And they'll sit there and say, I can't go any lower than this, I have to sell. So it turns people into being just the opposite of what you want. You'd rather have people sell at 2.5 on their portfolio. If the market does go back down, be a buyer at 1.5. But the reason why that doesn't happen, like you just mentioned, Nance, psychologically, they can't go below $1.5 million, because that's what they need to live on. And But at 2.5, it's almost like, you know, at a blackjack table and we're up a bunch. I never understood that mentality, but, well, you've been in both industries. How about commenting on that? What do you think?
Well, I think that a lot of people are just paralyzed into making a decision. And then they're, oh my God, it's going down. Oh my God, it's going down. Oh, it'll stop. It'll come back tomorrow. And especially if you don't watch the market that much, if you're not that into it, and you kind of just check it when your statement comes in, you kind of feel like you're not part of it. I think the average person thinks that things are going to be okay. So you've got like your one's like, oh, it's all going to be okay by the time I retire. There'll be 5 million in there, and then you'll have the people that it's the same way. I think it's the same where traders are. And actually, you find this more in guy traders. Guys, it's harder for them to take a loss. I think it is from being down there. Now, women are like, oh my God, I'm taking my money and going home. And they'll I'm on the downside. I lost my 5% in my head and I'm done. And I think a lot of time you guys will just ride this stuff into the ground.
Well, how could we be wrong? We got to be right, right?
Yeah, and that's part of it. It's just going to turn or... but I think simply being, paralyzed with indecision when faced with that kind of money. Like most people don't have that kind of money. If you do, they should treat it the same way as, are you gonna give 10 bucks out of your 20 and throw it on the ground now? Well, you have to monitor large amounts of cash. And if you think it's outside your realm of expertise, then have somebody do it for you. But in this market, people running around without, option downside protection, I just don't understand that at all.
You've got to have something.
I know it's a cost of doing business and nobody wants to pay for it. But it's just like when you ram your BMW into the parking lot wall or something, you're glad you got the insurance. By the time you wish you would have had the insurance, it's either too expensive to buy or, the catastrophes happen and you've lost 50% of your portfolio.
Well, what triggers were you mentioned last week, or maybe this weekend, that there's a few more houses on the market now than were, but it's still a small number, right?
It's getting to be a bigger inventory, but what's happening now is if it's not that perfect house, then it's sitting longer now. It's sitting longer, and I'm seeing some price reduction. The world's not going to hell in a handbasket, and what's pushing it to be, there's more volume of sales now because you've got that interest rate cut. So people are like, the world will get better for whatever people's political things are. People believe that things are going to be better under Trump. They're more willing to commit to buying something, looking at their future as possibly being brighter. So there are people are out there, they're buying. Stuff is happening, it's moving. And so it's not like they're running for the hills, but they're being picky. Now they can be pickier because like anything else, there's more to pick from.
So
it's jumping on something that they don't really want just to have a house. They're going to wait and say, maybe we'll see what comes out next week.
Art, when you mentioned a whole bunch of times that people love, they want something in totally move-in condition. Now, if you're an old grumpy dude, which John and I try not to be, you can say, these young kids.
John does real good at that.
Yeah. we could say, these young kids don't want to pick up a paintbrush, and they don't want to do anything. But then, if you talk to Nance, who is our stabilizing force here, Nance, without putting words in your mouth, you're going to say that a lot of times people are using their last dime to get the mortgage, and the last thing they need is a home improvement loan the next day.
That's correct.
It's not just being lazy. But
lines of credit are at prime, so people are saying to me, well, oh, now I'm at 7.75. Well, the mortgages are way under that. You'd have just been better off taking a larger mortgage and saving that money, and then you would have the money to pick up the paintbrush.
Is there any, and I'm going back a bazillion years, Jen, don't make me be this old. I seem to recall back when I was doing some remodeling stuff, back in the 80s and late 70s, that if you went to get them, if I went to somebody like you, Nance, I could go, I'm buying this house at 150. Everything else in the neighborhood is worth 200. I need to put 25 grand into it. I could get a loan for 175, and if, especially if you had good credit and maybe you'd have done it before. and I could get it all on the same ticket where I'd have the $25,000 to do the. There's no way that happens now, is there?
Absolutely.
No,
not.
I mean, if the appraisal was always key to this, and if you could get an appraisal, I mean, you didn't need maybe the entire amount to purchase the place, but whatever you wanted to have available in cash to upgrade it quickly, even maybe before you moved in, even you could get if the appraisal worked out and you had comparables around you. This is maybe difficult if you're buying it at something in the lower end of the market rather than closer to the middle, but. I think now, I mean, it's what you were saying too, Nancy, just a minute ago. I mean, people are afraid to spend anything now. I mean, they're afraid. Is this the charge on this credit card that's going to put me over the top? Is this the card that's going to bring me to bankruptcy? These are things that people are, I think, haunted by, and they're really. And this is what made the Depression last as long as it did. It didn't necessarily cause the Depression in 1929. But it's, you know, when FDR said, you know, we fear itself is our biggest threat, he was really onto something, because people were afraid to do anything, afraid to buy, afraid to spend a quarter on something, because you didn't know when you'd need that quarter more desperately for something else tomorrow. And this is what I'm afraid people are going to talk themselves into, where they just don't spend, period. And of course, that's going to be the end of a lot of retail operations. It's going to be, you're hurtful to everything that's got a floating price. So I worry about that. That's one thing where having a 10% cap on credit card interest, I think, would be a really good thing. I don't care who would propose it, Trump proposed it, but I think it's a really good idea, and it's one step in the right direction to give people some wiggle room so they're not completely destroyed by these outrageous interest rates.
Well, with the rates of bank stocks have been going up since he got elected, I don't think that's going to be his first utterance.
I know. That's a demoralizing thing right there. You know?
Yeah.
So maybe this will never happen, but it would be a good thing if it did.
Don't we actually supposedly have usury laws that the banks get around by being in states? It was a Supreme Court decision.
South Dakota, Citibank, all these places went to South Dakota.
Why is it?
I saw some credit card posting in fine print, like they had this little offer. The fine print was 34%.
Yeah. I've gotten like three updates in the.
You can get better on the mob,
right? Yes.
what is a payday loan place? It can't be much worse.
It can't be much worse.
I don't know, but I can tell you, I bought a piece of furniture and they had 0% financing for 12 months. After the 12 months is up, if I didn't pay it off, it's 35.99%.
Starting,
I just started laughing. Like, you've got to be kidding me. I mean,
what day does it start, though? It's not retroactive, is it?
Oh, yeah.
It's retroactive.
To day one,
and it says that right on the form.
Right. The day you incur the loan, it means, you know, the 12 months before when you sign that agreement, it's all that interest computed for that 12 months plus whatever default period you're in now.
All right, well, let me get this straight, just for the listeners. If I buy a $1,000 sofa and I don't pay them, I owe them $1,350.
Yep.
Yeah.
For God's sake.
Yes. And then they sent me something else, like if I wind up in this 35.99% and I make the minimum payment, it'll take 70 years to pay it off. And I thought, oh my God, I'll be dead. You know, the sofa will be
buried with the sofa.
Nancy, you obviously don't.
That's going to be crowded.
That would be a good thing. You obviously don't understand the song. You don't remember the song. St. Peter, don't you call me because I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store.
Oh, my God.
Remember that? Yep. Was it Tennessee Ernie Ford?
Tennessee Ernie Ford.
Maybe, I can't go. I can't die. I owe dough. As long as you owe dough, you got to keep living. So you got another 72 years.
Just think, if I'm cremated, that it'll really be crowded in there.
Okay. Yeah, but just think, though. I mean, us women don't want a couch for 72 years. That thing has to go anyway.
Yeah, what do you do if you got five of these all backed up? God. Are you saying a guy would keep a couch for 72 years?
Yes.
I have a question, John. What do you think will happen if the 10%, let's just say the 10% rule goes into effect? Who's going to issue credit cards?
Well, I think they're going to be really careful. You know, it will probably change the dynamics of who qualifies, the kind of balance you can carry. If banks aren't going to make any money on it, the interest rate, they're going to figure out some way to cut their losses. So it will be getting rid of the ones that are doomed from the beginning because the credit is marginal, or they're not going to let you, you know, milk the thing. So I suspect it's you know, going to change who gets credit and how much. So
yeah, I just think the banks will drop off giving credit cards, yeah. And then that's going to cause another.
What if they do the same thing that car dealerships do? That varies with the times. I mean, you get 0% financing. I noticed a couple 0% financing on TV the other night, and before they were, you know, up there also. So I think they can. Nobody, you know, they've been stealing money for us from so long. I think they could give some back. I mean, you can't tell me if you're still paying 1% on savings, regular savings accounts, to the poor schmuck at the banks, that you're going to steal 35% with the other hand.
How many people you think have money in the bank and are still paying 35%? They're scalping themselves, for God's sake.
Mm-hmm.
talk about we need some education in this country, for God's
sake.
Well,
you know, they should start teaching money management in, first grade. I'm sorry. People, it used to be you don't talk about money. You know, it was polite. Well, if you don't, then people end up not knowing it's a tool like anything else. You have to learn how to manage it.
It's one of my pet peeves. I've covered it the other day, so I don't really want to cover it with you guys that much. But I don't, an auto company that does that, that's patently illegal under the Clayton Act to
what?
Do that, to have 0% interest only with the place, their financer, where it should be 0% interest or $600 to take to another guy to get a loan.
Well, I think they do that because they usually say 0% financing or get $5,000 off.
No, you're showing your, that's 30 years ago. You're showing your age. You're only supposed to be 29.
Something like that. Doesn't that cover that?
They used to do that. When's the last time you saw
what?
That? They used to say, or...
Well, I don't watch regular TV much anymore, so they don't have a lot of that.
There's no way they're giving you the $5,000 check to take to your bank and...
No, they take the price off the top of the car or whatever amount it is.
I'm gonna bet, Jan, you can be the holder of the bet. I'm gonna bet if you and I walked into one of those dealers tomorrow, the price is exactly the same whether we buy it cash or whether they finance it.
I don't know. Maybe we can get some dealer to call.
Audrey's right. They do offer you cash, and it is off the car.
But it's never in the advertisement though.
Well, it does. True, but they do offer the cash. And my thing is, the thing with the car is they whatever they're giving you off, okay, or the 0% financing, that's built into the price of the car.
Oh yeah,
right.
Yeah.
So,
right.
What the credit card people, they how do they build in? They don't make money unless you do go to the monthly payment. If you just, well, I suppose they get 2 or 3%.
They get their fees.
Right, but now the fees are going on to the consumer. Mm-hmm. So I just see the credit card people just becoming less and less of them. I believe John is right that it'll be more scrutinized and credit will really play a big role now, credit scores, but you will really see the banks drop off on these credit card things.
Well, nobody's going to pay you 3% back or anything like that. That's going to die.
All of that's going to go away. I mean, they're just going to be harder and harder and harder to get. I know when I was growing up, the stores had credit cards, individual credit cards, but they don't have them like they didn't have Visa and MasterCard and stuff like that.
You females.
Well, with Nancy's point, that might be something that'd be good for retail business. I mean, well, you know, Amazon has their own credit card. I mean, look at that.
Yes.
But I mean, the credit card.
It's not always a way.
You high end females back in the day, you all had your Marshall Field card, right?
Oh yeah.
No, I didn't have a credit card.
I was gonna say I had like a Sears. I never had the Marshall Field, and my aunt had Carson's, which was slightly less than Fields.
Marshall Fields card for sure.
My mom worked downtown. She said to the lady, but she worked in nice office building and so forth. I was a bright lady. So the, a lot of the ladies there, they just went to Fields and just shopped for whatever they wanted, and every month they sent Fields $50, and if they bought a dress that month, it was okay. If they didn't, it was okay too. They just sent Fields $50 a month. I don't think the financing rates were 30%, but Fields, that credit card was hard to get, wasn't it? Not?
Yeah, that was,
yeah, it was.
Although that was a big deal.
I mean, right. If you were a little bit of a low life, you got the Carsons, and if you were a lower life, you got, like John and me, you got Sears, right, John?
Yeah, well, I think I told the story.
Montgomery Wards.
Yeah, or Montgomery Wards.
Oh,
yeah.
Montgomery Wards, remember that? Oh my God.
When my dad was working for the post office, they were getting people to participate in a health study of postal workers about the relationship between diet and cholesterol. So they put you on this prescribed diet, and you go in and see their doctors, and they measure your vitals and all that. But one of the incentives to get people to join this program was to give you and your family a Marshall Field's credit card. So my mom said, well, that's a no-brainer. Go do it. Because she said, wow. We never got a Fields card based on the salary, but you know she had that account till she died years after my dad, and it was because of that. They didn't give them out very freely.
Well, Kevin just said you'd end up with probably monthly fees on the cards, but I would say, Jan, yeah. If you're going to lower those rates, you're not going to start at 12. You're going to start at like 18.
Yeah.
Something that just brings it a little less.
And you can be
injurious.
Sure the banks will find some way to make up whatever the loss or the expected loss is going to be, so they'll do it. Some other way. So,
we got a dash here, guys. But I mean, you and I were, what the hell? I was reading it when I was at your place. It had to do with a huge percentage of people's credit balances. I mean, most people when they get a credit card, I won't say, I think most still don't ever intend to carry a balance. And how many of the balances are created by a non-anticipated medical event?
Yes.
And once you've got the balance, then you're stuck.
Yeah. But you know what? And I think Nancy will testify to this, the fact that credit medical bills have bankrupted so many people that a lot of times they're not even really considered part of the mortgage application because it's unfortunately such a common thing for people.
No, it's not. It's not. And you do not have to take a medical bill and put it on a credit card at all. The hospital will float you. I mean, you could pay them, you could come to an agreement where you're going to pay them $5 a month until it's paid off, and they have to accept that. There's some kind of law around this. And people, but what happens is they still call, collections still call, and people get tired of the phone calls. Instead of just saying, look, I have an arrangement with the hospital, blah, 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 that's it. I think the hospital might sell that collection to the collection company, and then a collection company just starts driving them nuts, and then people put it on their credit card. And that is a huge mistake.
Yep. Huge.
Hey, guys, we got a dash, but Kevin, you know what? I'm almost, we should grab an hour one of these Mondays. This panel on this whole area is spectacular. I would love having you four guys. Well, for including me, and for like a little period of time where we actually plan it. I think it was very informative because you guys bring out the best in each other. So I think it's a good do. Maybe we'll try a 45-minute or some Monday where everybody's on. As long as I remember to direct one person and the other so we're not talking to each other. I think it's great. So thank all you guys. Thank you, okay. Matt, for managing the carnage.
No problem.
SP Futures up 4, NASDAQ Futures up 67. Okay. We're just down, and now we're up. Now we're up a little bit. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
Those acts of God really stick it in and break it off, don't they?
A people say a man is made out of mud. A poor man's made out of muscle and blood. Muscle and blood, skin and bones. That's a week and a back that's strong. You lose 16 tons, and what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company store. I was born one morning and the sun didn't shine. I pick up my shovel and I walk to the mine. I loaded 16 tons, a number 9 hole. The straw boss said, get out of that hole, you load 16 tons. And what do you get? Another day older and deeper in debt. St. Peter, don't you call me, cause I can't go. I owe my soul to the company.
Stocks and Jocks is brought to you by PTI Securities and Futures. Go to ptisecurities.com. JetBlue Airways. It's not the only way to fly, but it should be. Visit JetBlue.com. Empower HR, your human resources partner. That's empowerhr.com. Home Source Realty. Call Audrey Johnson at 708-349-3456. BDL Compliance Consulting. Visit bdlcc.com. DAX Research. Listen to David Andelman on Mondays and Thursdays and go to dacsresearch.net.